Hey, guys. Oh, big gulps, huh? All right. Well, see you later.
And hey, welcome back to the Comedy Food Sports Podcast. We have a very special guest on the line.
Let me introduce literally my favorite comedian alive right now, Bill Burr. How are you, Bill?
Hey, what's going on?
The one and only Rich Eisen.
Sports is a lot safer than Christian Mingle.
Well, I wouldn't know about that. I'm a Jew.
Without further ado, the one and only best-selling author, popular radio show host, Jim Norton.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. What a rookie I am. You're listing things, I just interrupt.
You know, from The Man Show and Loveline, the godfather of podcasts himself, Adam Carolla.
Thanks for having me.
Very, very special guest. Used to be from Opie and Anthony, now from The Anthony Cumia Show. Anthony Cumia.
Look at that. What an intro. Jesus.
Smooth as silk.
Like, I thought I'd be on hold for the next segment while you talk to this wonderful person.
I was checking the specs on the end line for the rotary girder. I'm retarded.
Welcome back to the Comedy Food Sports Podcast. I'm coming in loud. Episode 98.
You're really not.
First off, my name is Patrick. We have Jay and Shelton with us as well. We want to thank everybody who listened in to 1360 AM, South Jersey, Philadelphia, Delaware. And we also want to thank everybody that listened to the podcast. We're the top trending podcast on Podomatic, which is one of the biggest podcasts. I think it's actually the biggest podcast, whatever you call it, like holding place, lack of a better term.
So basically, Libsyn. What other ones have you even heard?
There's like SoundCloud is one of the bigger ones too. But yeah, Podomatic's like, it's got to be right up there in the top group. Because the big time people like Carolla and them do their own. They have their own servers and stuff like that. So anyway, so we want to thank everybody because we were the top rated, top trending podcast. We were the number one podcast in Philadelphia. We were top like eight or top, I think we were seventh. I love when people say top seven, by the way. It's like, you were seventh. Stop saying top
seven. I wonder what place you came in.
Yeah, like, it's one thing if you're like top 20. You're like, all right, maybe you're 17, but... but yeah, we're the top trending podcast on Podomatic, and we were the top podcast in Philadelphia and top 10-ish, give or take, I think, in comedy. We're still like 25th in comedy, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, nice.
And it lasted like 3 days, too. So huge, huge thank you to John Ziegler and his fans. And we have a good chunk of the rest of his interview, possibly all of it. We haven't quite decided yet.
It wasn't all because of Chip Chantry?
And Chip, of course, crushed it. When I first posted it on Facebook, I was like, because John's controversial topic. I was like, because Chip usually likes everything instantly on Facebook, like literally within split seconds.
Yeah.
And he wasn't liking it. It was like an hour passed by, and I was like, Chip's avoiding liking this one like the play. He wants no association with this. But yeah, huge, huge thank you to John Ziegler's fans. I feel like you guys definitely came out strong. We got a couple of retweets from him and his fans, and you know, I definitely appreciate him putting it out there and Chip calling in. Chip's got a huge, huge following too. And I think we do too, just in general. So bravo to us.
Yeah, I got there. I don't know how.
Yeah, yeah. It just kind of like slowly creeped up. And then I think Jimmy Pardo really helped as well. Just kind of like we had a really good episode that week too.
Yeah, it was a pretty good week. Yeah, we'll take that week any other week. So we had the big Jimmy Pardo bump. We had the big Anthony Cumia bump, and now what was this one? Is it the Chip Chantry bump?
Yeah, this is the Chip bump. It's mostly because he takes pictures of a small dog. Yeah, a bearded fella. And he's hilarious.
snuck up on him.
Yeah, he's so good.
Snuck up on everyone.
Oh, sure.
Exactly. You know what happens when you sneak up on him, too, right?
Well, yeah, sure. 10 minutes later.
All right. So, again, thanks, everybody, for listening in. I'm just bleeping out Shelton with my own voice right now. Starting now. He's throwing out the thing. You know, the police get when there's a police chase and they throw out those things on the ground to stop the, make the car, like, get a flat, you know? Anyway.
Right. Great.
The strips. The something strips.
Yeah. Bacon strips?
Anyway. Yeah, so lots to talk about this week. We got baseball, we have some football, we have some Amy Schumer, we have some political slash baseball, which cracks me up. But we also have John Ziegler, the rest of his interview. So if I didn't already say it, we're going to have the rest of his interview tonight. So anybody that was left with a cliffhanger and didn't listen to our SoundCloud thing, SoundCloud like strip I put on the website, make sure you listen in and start up in about 5 minutes or so. We'll play the rest of that and then we'll close things out. So what to talk about? There's baseball. And there's Curt Schilling, who's going to run against Elizabeth Warren. Which one do we want to talk about first?
Well, what are the odds on that? It's what, zero. Two years from now?
Absolutely zero. Yeah, absolutely zero. Do you know why?
Why is that?
Because he defended Trump on his comments. And literally about 7 minutes later, someone put up a post from Twitter last year that he was calling people disgusting because they were putting up rape comments about his daughter when he was congratulating her on the softball thing.
Yeah,
and then he put up he was like in the comment section, he's like, I've been to some of the raunchiest locker rooms in the world. I've never heard talk like this before.
That dude. And then he also found out where those people lived.
Yeah, and it was putting their names. He got two scholarships away from them.
Yeah, he trolled the trolls. Their comments were like ridiculously gross, though. I will say that. Like, if I ran a business and found out about it, I would definitely fire them. High five them on the way out, but fire them.
Sure. Toe the company line.
Yeah.
Right. Who's listening, Patrick?
Yeah, right. Exactly. No, they were like soup. They were like beyond like gross. It was all, yeah. Like, she was a minor technically at the time, too. Anyway.
And the thing is, yeah, don't get me wrong. They were disgusting, but they were equally as disgusting as Trump's. So it's like, come on, dude. You can't say one thing and then defend the guy and say it's locker room talk.
Yeah, funny because I loathe him like I have from pretty much day one, even back when he was a Red Sox player. But I always found myself sticking up for him because people like blindly hated him because he was a Republican and not for anything else. Like that was the only reason. And I was kind of like, seems a little unfair just for that. Like that's the reasoning because he's like is a Christian and he's a Republican. Don't get me wrong. He's a douche. Not denying that, but the reasoning behind it is always the same. It's like, he's not in the Wall of Fame in Philly, and they freaking put, what's his name, Lieberthal over him. Like, come on.
Well, why wouldn't you? Come on.
Lieberthal? I know. I mean, he's a solid pitcher for 3.5 years for a team that was below average. It makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense. Post the reject group, post the Incavelias of the world and everybody else that was playing. it was like, anyway.
What's your stance on Von Hayes?
Jimmy Pardo doesn't know who he is, which is a little disappointing.
Well, that's always the reference. If you're going to go like Phillies baseball from the 80s, if somebody doesn't know Von Hayes, it's kind of like the shibboleth. I mean, if somebody's like legit.
Yeah, it's like Steve Sachs. Yeah.
Juan Samuel. Do you want to bring up Juan Samuel?
Everybody knows Juan, though. Come on. If you know Juan, you know them all. Come on.
Okay. Can I edit this out, too?
Yeah, well, it's AM radio. People are laughing.
Oh, yeah, they're laughing. They're making T-shirts that say that.
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah, we can't talk ill about Kurt. I forgot. This might be a conservative station.
Well, it's conservative and Philly,
Yeah.
I don't want to bring up the 93 Phils, but... so what else do we want to get to? We only have, 6 minutes left because we have the rest of the interview this week.
Amy Schumer is doing a stand-up act in Tampa. And what cracks me up, so I'll give the short version of what happened. Basically, she started pooping on Trump a little bit, and she got a little bit of booze, and then she like brought somebody up on stage who was a Trump supporter and just said, why are you voting for Trump? Guy was totally reasonable. He was just like, I'm voting against Hillary. I'm not even voting for Trump, but I'm voting for him. Or I'm voting for Trump because I'm voting against Hillary or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she just like sat him down. She sent him back, and then she basically said, anybody that makes noises, basically you're kicked out. And 200 people left or whatever. The funniest part about it, there's two sides to it. A, what cracked me up the most was, I forgot whose quote it is. Might be Bill Maher for that matter. I don't remember his quote, but it was about Lenny Bruce. And it was they said that the issue was not that he was offending people and getting arrested and stuff like that. He forgot about the comedy. And that's kind of what she was doing. She
exactly.
There's got to be humor involved in this part. And the other part to defend her is they talked about the 200 people leaving. There was 25,000 people at that show. 2,000 people left. Whoa, man. That really stinks. I mean, she was struggling.
That's still a lot of people to leave at exactly the same time. That's noticeable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. It was a big enough thing where it made the rounds. It was on TMZ and the whole nine, but it was just one of those things where I'm like, it's the same place that like Tool would play a show or like Radiohead. And if 200 people left there, I'd be like, yeah. Maybe they're upset because they won't play Creep. You know, they just protesting that horrible song.
I would be.
Anyway. So that was, I know I didn't even let you guys really respond to that. That was just in the news.
No, you're right. I can't remember one funny Lenny Bruce clip I've heard. Maybe I'm just looking at the wrong ones.
Great movie though. Dustin Hoffman, independent movie from like the 70s. Really good movie.
I never got around to watching that. No, but everything I've heard about him was just like whining about being on trial.
Yeah. He was just kind of like, he was talking about being married and it was very good storytelling, but it just wasn't that funny. Like that's just all.
So he was more of a storyteller. It's just like the only stories I've heard were about him getting arrested where he was just talking about that. And
yeah. Yeah. Okay. It was basically, if you took Richard Pryor and just made him not funny, that's basically
what Bruce was really, you know, fair enough
before him. Yeah. I mean, it's like very legitimate comparison. what was I going to say? So baseball, one of my favorite things that happened is there's a big petition to not let the Blue Jays have the Indians logo in during this series that started.
Yeah, I saw that.
The judge was basically like, this is so dumb. I can't believe that I'm spending more than 5 minutes on this argument. Like, get rid of the logo in the major leagues and just get rid of that. And then we won't have this problem. Like, I don't have to make this decision, change everything that we have to do in the stadium and everything. It cracks me up. It is ridiculous that they're still called that, but
you know. Oh, totally. Yeah.
But it's the craziest part about it. It's like the Redskins is like, it's offensive because it's offensive, but at least it's like a specific thing. Like Indians were referencing different people when they called them Indians. It's not even like the right thing. Like the Redskins, racist, yes, but at least that was a term for them. You know?
Well, that'd be nice.
Indians,
I mean,
we're supposed to be the Eastern Indians. The whole thing was like, that's the part that boggles my mind about them.
Well, if you're referring to a bunch of different groups of people, then why don't you just call them the Cleveland people? I think that'd be really nice. It's inclusive.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't offend. I mean, it does maybe offends like dogs and other animals. I don't know. It's tough to.
Dogs are people. Knows. Come on.
Well, everybody has an emotional sport dog nowadays, so it doesn't make sense.
We're racing the clock on this one. We didn't talk at all last week, I felt, right? Because we had Chip Cohen and then we had half of the interview and we've got like 2 minutes left here. I don't know. There's so much we haven't. We barely talked about Trump. I mean, we haven't had like a real episode in like 3 weeks now.
Maybe Schumer's not a fan. So
that's what I heard. I just heard that now because I don't know the news. I'm Jay. My role is to have Patrick explain the news to me. That's pretty much the whole
show. Your uncle's Senator Schumer, man. Remember that girl that was supposed to call in about the big
conspiracy? Yeah.
Like, Amy Schumer is part of that because Chuck Schumer is her uncle.
Dare not speak her name again. I
randomly just read her email, the tweet that she sent me. It's clear Jay is emotionally retarded. I was like, well, you know.
No, it is clear.
I'm not saying to argue with you on that one. I just think the rest of your points are a little bit aggressive.
It's a bit more complex than that, although I agree with your initial statement.
Exactly. Neither here. It's like when Amy Schumer was, you know, was making comments about Trump. I was like, yes, it's true, but, you know, you at least got to be funny about it or something. But
I know. All right.
Bigger fish to fry.
Well, let's wrap it up. Okay, time? So, let's just go right into the interview now and make sure you go to comedyfoodsports.com. You listened to last week's episode, which was part one of the interview. You listen to this week's episode if you're not already doing it on the website. Listen to at least 15 minutes of it so we get counted for a listen. We're going after advertisers. So I just want to tell you how to game it. And the full interview is up there too. You could download that or just stream it, right? Which way do we have it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's if you go to comedyfoodsports.com and then just click on last week's episode. And I'll try to put it up somewhere else, but for now, it's just on last week's episode. So it's episode 97 with Chip Chandry and John Ziegler. And yes, the rest of his interview is coming up next. Pretty powerful stuff. We're going to have him back at least one more time, if not 12 or 13 more times, because I can just hear that guy talk and just the rasp in his voice is awesome.
No, he's got radio energy. It was really inspiring. You know, we have podcast energy where we don't sit close enough to the mic and we just
we have to do 12 edits
plan anything.
Right. Yeah. Like Shelton has to drop some P-bomb in the middle of everything.
Hey, listen. My P-bomb was perfectly timed.
It was. It was kind of flawless.
It was topical.
It was perfectly timed, like Andy Kaufman style.
Topical. Yeah, that comes the same day. Exactly. Topical, offensive, and it grabs you right by the...
Right by the horns. Yeah. Tell you.
The hair, yeah. The
short ones. Right by the orange hair.
I would need my friend Donald Trump to elaborate.
Or Billy Butch, you know, anybody can jump in.
Save it for next week. We have so much to catch up on. Jesus.
Let you do anything.
What, you're not gonna hug him? It's Donald.
He just got off the bus. Come on. The stupidest reason anybody's ever asked for a hug.
Yeah, and you could just see it in his eyes. He was like, oh, why do I have to be friends with this guy? My job's the like, I get paid a lot, but I hate my life. I got a wife and kids at home.
All right, after the break, John Ziegler, comedyfoodsports.com.
And check him out at ZiegmanFreud.com, or at ZiegmanFreud, I mean, and FramingPaterno.com. Yeah, John's awesome. Really, really compelling stuff. And like I said, we're going to have him on a few different times. Going to talk about interviewing Sandusky and his wife, and you know, kind of like three or four key points that he feels like are the dead ringers for quote unquote him being right. From there we will talk to you guys next week. Some good guests coming up. Some of them are still being confirmed, but we might have a couple of really funny comedians that have been reaching out to me. I was hoping they'd have some local shows here, but they don't anytime soon, but they have some Comedy Central specials coming up, so we'll have them on. And
see, the key is to keep it vague, because then if they cancel and you already put a name out there, you look like chumps.
I almost said like Middle Eastern, because the dude's totally Middle Eastern. I don't want to narrow it down too much. It's like not Kumail, it's not Hassan. By the way, both those guys are not Middle Eastern, but that's all right. I'm just being a little bit racist. Pakistan is not Middle Eastern. But anyway.
I have a black friend.
Did you know Todd Bowles, the Jets coach, by the way? Are you guys friends?
Okay. I wasn't sure if you mentioned that. I do know. He'll be at the party. He'll be at the reunion. We all mentioned
Patrick already. Anyway, so we will close things up after John. And we thank you so much. ComedyFoodSports.com at CFSPod. On Instagram at Comedy Food Sports. I think I posted two things, both basically bragging about how well we did. But we will get on the horn with that more often. And we thank you guys again. We'll see you in about 40 minutes. Good day. So where do you want to go next? Do you want to go to the McQueary piece? Because obviously that was a pivotal piece. Or is there something in between that you want to talk about?
And it's the story that really got me involved in this case, because, you know, I have a pretty good BS detector, and my BS detector was at an 11. You know, I mean, there was it went way past 10 when I heard the story of Mike McQueary, because here's what we were told. We were told that Mike McQueary is an assistant, not even assistant coach, a graduate assistant, which is, if you know anything about sports, means you're basically dog crap. I mean, you're the lowest of the low. You're barely even on the staff. Former Penn State quarterback. He walks in to the locker room on a Friday night. He hears the shower. He hears some slapping sounds, and he turns the corner and looks into a mirror. And by his own testimony, by the way, people don't realize this, only looks through the mirror for a couple of seconds. And he determines that Jerry Sandusky is engaged in some sort of a sex act, which would be later reported falsely as an anal rape, with a boy who he thinks, he's not sure how old it is, but somewhere in the 10 to 12-year-old range. He then calls his dad and talks to a Dr. Dranoff that night, and then the next morning he goes over to Joe Paterno's house, tells him about allegedly this sex act that he witnessed, and then Joe Paterno after that basically does very little. He passes it up the food chain. Penn State ignores it, and then we never hear anything about this on this event until 2011, when suddenly the whole world comes apart, when it becomes revealed in his grand jury presentment after Jerry Sandusky's arrest. Now, that story, to me, immediately was ridiculous, because here's the first thing you have to believe. You have to believe that a then, I believe, 27-year-old, 6'4", 6'5", 220-pound something ripped former quarterback who's fully clothed walks in on what he sees as a sex act between an old guy and a boy, and he does nothing. He does nothing.
Huh. That part always confused me, for sure.
Right, right. Yeah, well, let's do the math on this. He does nothing. He, by his own admission, he slams a locker door. in one of his testimonies, he's asked, okay, so what you know, why did you slam the locker door? I'm paraphrasing here, but it's basically like Mike says, well, I basically broke the mood, and I didn't think anything else was going to happen after that. Like, what?
Broke the mood.
right. I mean, like, so you're going to leave this little boy with Jerry Sandusky.
I've done all I can do.
Right. He doesn't identify the boy. He doesn't forget about beating the crap out of Sandusky. Right. I mean, which he easily could do, but he doesn't say a word. He doesn't identify the boy, doesn't take the boy out of the situation. Now, I get people panic, okay? I get it. Okay, so let's go down the panic theory. Let's pretend that Mike McQuarrie is just the biggest panic master of all time. He's played quarterback in front of 90,000 people and national television audiences, but he's a freaking panic. Right. Okay. Fine. But he's a complete panic master in this kind of a pressure situation. Okay. If it was really that horrific, and if it was really that much of a panic, then number one, you would be explicit with what you would tell your dad and Dr. Dranoff, which he was not. He told them nothing about a sex act. In fact, Dranoff asked him three times, did you see a sex act? And Dranoff testified that Mike McQuarrie said no all three times. You would be explicit with Joe Paterno when you saw him the next day after you had a whole day to think about what happened. You could even say to, you know, I can't believe I left. I don't know what happened. I lost my mind. This is insane. Nothing like that is what he says to Joe Paterno. But the most damaging thing to me about Mike McQuarrie's what really happened here is that when Mike McQuarrie is finally asked about this, he actually is interviewed by Penn State's athletic director and the head of campus police, which people don't realize, a couple weeks later because of what Joe Paterno does, which is to report it properly up the food chain. But when he gets finally gets talked to by investigators in late 2010 about this, he says that the event took place on March 1st of 2002. That's what he says. It happened on March 1st, 2002. In fact, his first testimony is it happened on March 1st, 2002. Well, there's a problem. It didn't happen on March 1st, 2002. It didn't happen in March. It didn't even happen in 2002. It happened on February 9th of 2001. So this horrendous, horrific, life-changing event that caused Mike McQuarrie to go into a massive panic, McQuarrie not only doesn't remember the date, the month, or the year, he thinks it happened after 9/11 when it actually happened before 9/11. There is no chance in the world, no chance, you would forget if you saw a local legend raping a young boy. Whether it happened before 9/11 or after 9/11. However, what you might do is you might forget the date, the month, and the year if what you saw was no big flipping deal. It was simply a boy in the shower that weirded you out because you had heard sounds before you looked in the mirror, and McQuarrie, by his own admission, thought he was going to witness a man and a girl or a woman, presumably a man and a woman, having sex with each other because he heard slapping sounds. So now, by the way, I've always thought that was odd. What kind of situation is going on at Penn State where you immediately think you're going to see a man and a woman in the Penn State showers having sex? But that's a whole other story. I think it actually goes to Mike McQuarrie's mindset, though, because Here's what's interesting. Here's what you don't know. Here's what the media won't tell you. In fact, ESPN censored this from their, and I mean censored this, from their profile of McQueary a couple of years ago in ESPN the magazine. Don Vanatta and I had a conversation, which I have recorded, and it's on YouTube. You can listen to this for yourself, where Don Vanatta was going to report exactly what I had previously heard from the highest sources in this case, that when McQueary is actually finally contacted by investigators in late 2010 about this event, he doesn't remember the date, the month, and the year, McQueary thinks, incorrectly apparently, that what the reason why the investigators call his wife is that they have found out that McQueary has been sending naked pictures of his penis through a Penn State phone to a woman, not his wife. Now, put yourself in McQueary's boots here. You're crapping your pants because, one, your marriage is over, and two, your career is over. You work for Joe Paterno. If it's out that you've been sending penis pictures, it's over. It's over, okay? So when investigators talk to him and say, hey, we want to talk to you about something you may have seen with Jerry Sandusky many years ago and a date, a month, and a year you don't remember, McQueary is thrilled to give them whatever they want. And so when he gets told, and there's proof of this in Mike McQueary's own testimony, when McQueary gets told by investigators, hey, look, we got a kid, Aaron Fisher, I doubt they told him his name, but doesn't matter. We got a kid who says that Jerry's been molesting him for years, and we heard through a very bizarre email tip, I mean, off-the-charts bizarre email tip. I don't know if I have time to get into it, but it's an amazing part of this whole saga. We heard through this tip that you may have seen Jerry Sandusky in a shower with a boy. Can you help us here? We need a witness. We've been trying for 2.5 years at this point to nail this thing down. Actually, just over 2 years, to nail this thing down. We haven't been able to do it. If you're Mike McQueary, who's not a very bright guy to begin with, everyone I talk to says this, you know, the idea that you're going to go, oh, my God, maybe what I saw that weirded me out was way worse than I even realized, and you're going to give the investigators what they want, especially when they're good at manipulating you. And Mike McQueary's own testimony proves this. To me, the most important testimony in the whole case is in the preliminary hearing of late 2011. Mike McQueary says or claims that he had told people around the Penn State program that Jerry shouldn't be around the lockers, that he doesn't understand why he's hanging around. Now, that's pretty damning, right? You would think that, okay, if you saw somebody sexually abusing a boy in a Penn State shower, you would feel the same way. What the hell is Jerry doing around the program? This is ridiculous. Get him out of here, right? Except there's a problem. On cross-examination, he was asked, did you start saying that about Jerry before or after investigators came to you in late 2010 and told you about an investigation of Jerry Sandusky for child sex abuse? And McQueary acknowledges under oath that it was after. After. What does that tell you? It tells you that McQueary became convinced that what he saw 10 years earlier, an event that he doesn't remember the date, the month, and the year for, was something different than what it actually was. That he never thought of Jerry Sandusky as a pedophile until after the investigators come to him, because he didn't see a sex act. He saw Jerry in a shower with a boy. Now, why am I so sure of this? Because I know the story of the real boy. We know who the boy is, even though he didn't testify at trial. But there's a good reason why he didn't testify at trial. The reason why he didn't testify at trial is nothing ever happened. And that's exactly what he said, the boy said. That's exactly what the boy, his name is Alan Myers, said on the day that Joe Paterno was fired, November 9, 2011. He comes into Joe Amendola, Jerry Sandusky's defense attorney's office for the second consecutive day. By the way, the first day Joe Amendola is so unprepared for him, he tells him to go home. After being told I'm the boy in the McQueary shower and nothing happened, Amendola is so stupid, he tells him to go home. Well, Alan Myers comes back the next day and gives a full statement to an FBI-trained former police officer working for Joe Amendola, and the statement, you can find at framingpaterno.com and many other things that I've written elsewhere about this case, and the statement could not be more blockbuster. The guy, Alan Myers, who, by the way, at this point is a 24-year-old married sergeant in the Marine Corps. Not exactly a wallflower here. Not exactly somebody. Not exactly somebody who's going to be manipulated by Jerry into after having been sexually abused by him for years to come forward and say nothing really happened when it actually did. And, he, and his statement is couldn't be more clear. He knows things only the McQueary kid can know, including the locker slam and the fact that Jerry had told him that Penn State might call him a couple weeks later to find out what the hell really happened there. Unfortunately, Penn State made a huge mistake and never called Allen Myers, I think, because they were convinced this was a big nothing burger and didn't want to bother the kid, which actually would have made sense based upon the time period, because you got to remember, 2001 is before there is any notion of a child sex abuse scandal. It's a different era. People forget that because this story comes out after the Catholic Church child sex abuse scandal, but the events occur before that scandal is known. And so that changes, I believe, the context for how Penn State is handling this situation. There's not the same urgency. There's not the same sense of cynicism, not the same sense of, holy cow, there was a man taking a shower with a boy. This has got to be bad. They take Sandusky's word for it. He seems believable. He's a legend. He runs this Second Mile charity that's been, for decades, been doing great work in the area. And they go, okay, fine. They do, by the way, tell his boss. They tell Sandusky's boss, the Second Mile Charity, and they know it's Allen Myers, which is partially why they don't do an investigation, because they know Allen Myers, and they know the relationship is basically a father-son relationship, to the point where eventually, here are the things that happened with Jerry Sandusky and Allen Myers between the time of the McQueary episode and the time that Allen Myers gives that statement saying that nothing ever happened. This is mind-blowing, guys. And no one in the news media will report this, even though I went on the Today Show and I waived the statement that Allen Myers gave on national television, and no one gave a damn because the media is totally in the tank here. But about 2.5 years after this episode, by the way, this kid was almost 14 years old. He was 2 years short of winning a varsity letter on his high school football team. He was no little kid. He in his senior high school football game, he doesn't have a dad. So guess who stands in as his dad as a senior high school football game? Jerry Sandusky does. Then that spring, he asks Jerry Sandusky to be the commencement address speaker at his high school, West Branch High School. And sure enough, Jerry Sandusky is the commencement address speaker for West Branch High School in his senior year because Allen Myers requested that. Then Allen Myers goes to Penn State during a summer session. Where does he live? He lives for 3 months with Jerry and Dottie Sandusky. Then he goes into the Marines. While he's in the Marines in North Carolina, Jerry Sandusky's mother dies. From his barracks in North Carolina, Allen Myers drives 10.5 hours each way to attend the funeral of Jerry Sandusky's mother. When Allen Myers finally gets married, guess who he invites to the wedding? Jerry and Dottie Sandusky. The picture of Jerry Sandusky and Allen Myers at Allen Myers' wedding is the picture that Jerry Sandusky uses in the internet version of his retirement letter from the Second Mile charity, and there's only one kid in his entire Second Mile career that he mentions by name in the letter. Take a guess who it is. Allen Myers. Now, this is the criminal mastermind. The criminal mastermind that's been getting away with this child sex abuse for 40 years has no idea. At this point, by the way, the time of the letter, the authorities don't know who Mike McQueary is. Has any relevance in this case. They have no idea about any McQueary episode. So he's going to put Allen Myers, the McQueary kid's name and photograph in his retirement letter for the Second Mile charity? Are you freaking kidding me? It's completely absurd, as is the notion that Allen Myers was ever abused. But an interesting thing happens. Once Allen Myers gives his statement, that night Joe Paterno is fired. Graham Spanier, the president of the university, is effectively fired. The whole world changes. The money is on the table. And as fate would have it, the number one attorney in State College, who was immediately trolling for Sandusky accusers and eventually ended up getting at least 9 of them, was a guy by the name of Andrew Shubin, who is basically a DUI lawyer who has hit it huge, has made millions of dollars in this case. Well, guess who had represented Alan Myers in not one but two DUIs in the previous year and a half before the crap hit the fan in this case. And guess whose mother once worked for Andrew Shubin in the office? That's right, Alan Myers. And what I believe it's very clear happened is that Alan Myers ends up getting flipped, gets convinced to go along with this by Andrew Shubin, and gets paid $3 million. I've been to his very nice house on the river in Millhall, Pennsylvania. He will not speak to anybody about this. I've tried numerous times. I've emailed. I've made videos for Alan. I've said, look, if I've got this wrong, just tell me two words. You're wrong. And I'll go away and I'll never bother you again. I've gotten nothing from him. We've had an investigator go to his house. The investigator felt as if he had verified his original story of no abuse that had occurred, although I'm a little skeptical of that, having heard the tape of that interaction, but that's what the investigator believes. He never testifies at trial. His attorneys never make him known until after the trial is over. And the reality is that the prosecution lied to the jury by saying that the identity of the Mike McQueary kid was known, quote, only to God. No, it wasn't. It wasn't known only to God. It was known to everybody. It was known, in fact, to the prosecutors themselves, and that's why they didn't call him, because they didn't like his story. Because his story is that nothing ever happened. And by the way, it's not just his statement that nothing ever happened. I realize that the child sex abuse terrorists, and there are people out there who are child, and I understand, look, I get it. When you've been abused sexually as a child, it's horrendous, it's horrible, I'm sure it scars you for life, but it also impacts your perception of everything. And these groups have created rules now where if you get accused, it is impossible to prove your innocence. But as I just outlined the history of the relationship between Jerry Sandusky and Alan Myers, any reasonable person would look at that and go, that's not a guy that got abused. There's no way. That's just not possible. And because it didn't happen. And that's the only way to make this case make any sense at all.
So I know you'd said it before. So Alan has not spoke at all to anybody, basically, since the case?
He has spoken to investigators. Okay. And it's interesting. It's interesting because this is how bizarre this situation is. And that is that Alan Myers tried to become an accuser, and the investigators didn't even believe his story of being an accuser. Wow. In fact, they wrote in their report on him that they believed that his attorney, Andrew Shubin, had written his story of abuse for him. Now, which is really amazing, because in this case, the investigators believe everybody got abused except for Alan Myers. So that's the bizarreness of this.
Interesting. Okay. So that brings us, I know we're kind of up against the time. We'll definitely have you back, but, let's get on to kind of what are the key pieces. Obviously the McQueary piece is probably, I would argue, one of the most, probably top two or so pieces, but what are like the top three pieces that make most people just assume that, you know, what the media told us is right, and then where you would counterpoint that, and then obviously we'll make sure we plug your website and everything else as well to make sure people are going there to see more.
Well, I mean, there's so many, it's hard to narrow it down to three. I mean, I would say that Alan Myers is clearly number one. The people that tell me that know Aaron Fisher and say he's lying are number two, because, see, here's the thing. This whole case is based upon two pillars that turn into a third pillar. The pillars are Mike McQueary and Alan Myers, Aaron Fisher. Those are the first two pillars. Everything in this case is built from there. If Fisher is a fraud, which I think that he is, because I think his mother and he basically conspired to get out of their welfare lives, and very successfully so, if Fisher is a fraud and McQueary is a fraud, because we know of Alan Myers, then everything else falls apart. That's what people need to understand. That's how we get to 32. But here's the third pillar that I would add, since you use the number three. I know that the Penn State settlements are a fraud. That 32 number is meaningless. And I know it not just because I've dealt with everybody in this case, and I know Jerry, and I know Dottie, and I know all the facts, and there's no way that Jerry and Dottie were capable of this massive conspiracy. They're just not physically, mentally capable of it. It's not in their DNA. It's just not even theoretically possible. But even taking away all that, here's what I know that no one else knows. I had a fake accuser, a purposely fake accuser, go in to the settlement system. And not only was this purposely fake accuser who came to me and said, look, I know Jerry, I was at the trial, there's no way this is true, I was a member of the Second Mile Charity, this is all bull crap, I want to try to fix this. I said, okay, why don't you go to one of the most prominent lawyers in the case and claim to be a Jerry Sandusky accuser and see where this takes you? Well, everything went down exactly as I expected. He was not only believed, he was embraced, he was manipulated, his story was changed to make it more amenable to a Penn State settlement. He went to a therapist numerous times and was talked to about repressed memory therapy, which is a completely bogus theory that's been completely discredited in court, which I believe numerous members of the 32, or especially of the 8 that went to trial, either pretended to have engaged in or actually engaged in. My theory is that they pretended to engage in repressed memory therapy because they needed an excuse for why they never told anybody. That's what really happened here. But there are other people who have different views on that in this case. And by the way, all this is on tape. My fake accuser taped everything, taped all of his conversations with the lawyer, taped all of his conversations with the therapist. So the whole thing is a scam. And by the way, Penn State in their contract, which I have a copy of, in the contract with these accusers actually says clearly, directly, we are not verifying the validity of your accusation. All it is they're paying them to go away. That's all it is. And the reason why those stories involving Joe Paterno from the 1970s came about is very understandable to anybody that uses any common sense. Why is it? You guys will get this, I think. Why do you think it is that the only two of the 32 accusers that have ever said anything about Joe Paterno's knowledge just happen to be the two oldest allegations, coming from 1971 and 1976? Why would that be? Doesn't that seem upside down? Like, if Joe Paterno knew all the way back in 71 and 76, why the hell is he bothering to tell anybody about the McQuarrie episode? Because he's no chance, and that he is a pedophile for 40 years. What's the point? Or at that point, he's known for 30 years. I mean, why is he bothering 30 years later? Oh, you know, maybe by now I should tell the athletic director that Jerry's a pedophile. That's number one. But here's why the 70s accusers did what they did. You see, I know because of my fake accuser what the rules were. Here's how you get a settlement. These were literally the only standards. Were you a member of the Second Mile Charity, and were you under the age of 30 years old? If you were, and you said Jerry Sandusky did something to you, and especially if it was on Penn State's campus, guess what? Merry Christmas! You got $3 million, all right? That was no questions asked. Now, there were other people that didn't qualify for that. And as the accusations, you know, the accusers get older and older, they're over the age of 30, then they had to spice it up a little bit. Like Matt Sandusky had to add some bull crap about some assistants seeing it, which, by the way, he never put in his book or has ever talked about publicly. How the hell does that happen? It only happens because you're making it up because you know you need money because your lawyer told you that Penn State needs some extra from the older guys, and Matt Sandusky is too old. He's outside of the age of 30 for the statute of limitations. Well, that gets me to the guys from 1971 and 1976. They got a real big problem, because not only are they way older than 30 years old, the Second Mile Charity doesn't start till, wait for it, 1977. So if you're at the age where the oldest you can be to make an accusation was in 1971 or 1976, you're crap out of luck. Wow. Because you're not a member of the Second Mile Charity, and you're over 30 years old. So what do you do when you're crap out of luck? You throw a Hail Mary. And the Hail Mary is, wait a minute, hold on. Does it help if Joe Paterno knew about this? Well, actually, son, it does. Yeah, actually, yeah. Here's a check, and why don't you just go away, and hopefully no one will actually ever hear about this, unless some judge is stupid enough to mention it in a one-line opinion, and the media goes bat crap crazy with a bunch of headlines that are based on nothing, and everyone else eats it up. That does that story make a hell of a lot more sense than Joe Paterno knowing for 40 years about this, guys?
Wow. Yes. Yeah, I absolutely. So I know we're kind of crunched for time here. So we'll definitely have a follow-up call with you, but I want to make sure one quick thing so everybody knows kind of what is there anything that can be next? I know there's an appeal earlier this year. I didn't really hear the details on that, but is there anything that's next? Anything that is going to be coming up in real time?
Well, Jerry Sandusky is in the process of what's called post-conviction relief petition, which is basically his last hope. Unfortunately, he's in front of the very same judge that was in charge of the original trial. So that judge is being asked to invalidate the most important trial of his life against the wishes of 100% of the news media and 98% of the public opinion in the state of Pennsylvania. Good luck with that. That's not going to happen. It is my belief, and it is Jerry's lawyer's belief, that this judge understands that something really, really bad happened. Is he going to have the balls to fix it? No, he's not, because people don't have balls anymore. So Jerry's going to, in my view, every day that Jerry doesn't lose this appeal is a bad day for him, because Jerry might die. Jerry is 72 years old, I guess, now. Not, you know, he's being treated horribly in a maximum security prison. And, you know, it is my very strong belief that if Jerry lives long enough for this to get out of the state of Pennsylvania and into a federal court is going to crap all over this trial, because it was the Salem witch trial of 2012. But as long as it's in Pennsylvania, I don't see how the politics of this make that possible. And unfortunately, it's my belief that Jerry will die before he ever gets to a fair hearing.
Wow. Okay. And that was going to be my next question. How long is there a time frame to when it'll go federal, or is it just
no one knows? I mean, these things take years. I mean, it would take several years for it to get to federal, and frankly, it might take longer than that, because, you know, this judge has spent way more time on this post conviction relief petition than it took for Jerry to be convicted in the first place. Jerry was convicted within 7 months of his arrest. This appeal process, this portion of the appeal process, has been going on way longer than that, which, by the way, I would submit to you is maybe the first indication that something's wrong. I mean, if he's really so guilty, then why is this taking so long? This should be easy. But there's no evidence in the case against him, and I think the judge knows there's something wrong. And by the way, I'll leave you with this. If you were abused by Jerry Sandusky, one of those 32, and you read in the newspaper that there were hearings going on where a judge was even considering letting him out of prison, don't you think that one of the 32 might show up for one of the hearings to have their voice heard? Because it's not like the media is going to, you know, not treat him with kid gloves or ask him any tough questions. Yet, to my knowledge, and I've made this point numerous times and never been contradicted, not one of the 32 has shown up for any of those hearings. And the reason is because they don't give a crap. They got what they wanted out of this. They're all driving sports cars and motorcycles and going on gambling trips. I got it all on their Facebook pages. No one or hardly anybody around them knows that they're even Sandusky accusers, so no one can call BS. They all got what they wanted. They don't care about Jerry being in jail because none of them got sexually abused.
Wow. All right. Well, that is a great way to wrap things up. But I do want to have, whenever we can, like a couple weeks down the road or whatever it might be, I'd love to have a call specifically about the interviews you did with Sandusky. I'm real curious about that dynamic.
Sure.
But that's probably enough time for another another episode.
I'll talk to you anytime you want. Just send me the link when you get it to the full interview next week, okay?
Absolutely, yeah. And for everybody listening at home, we're going to have, and I'll announce it before we actually put this out, but we're going to have a piece of the interview on the radio broadcast, and we're going to have the full interview on the website. So we'll send a link to that. John, we really thank you. I mean, this is really eye-opening, and we really appreciate you. I know it's a it's a touchy subject, and you know, you don't have a lot of people in your corner right now. So you know, I'm glad you know you're fighting for what you believe is right, and you know, I hope it's going to be all worth it in the end for you, for sure.
All right. Well, it won't be, but I appreciate that. we'll talk to you again soon. Take care.
Thanks so much. Take care, John. Welcome back to the Comedy Police Sports Podcast, episode 97. We're going to wrap things up here, but we just want to unravel all that. So, yeah, that was John Ziegler from Framing Paterno, and
it was amazing. I couldn't jump in, and I was trying to get you to take a little bit of a break. So that's a full disclosure thing, Patrick, and we'll communicate that to John. Is that, let me see, at maybe like 40 minutes in, I stopped and saved because I was really worried about losing everything because it was amazing. Okay. Yeah, so I don't know if he's going to think we cut anything out, but I just wanted to get that out there right away. But it's a lot to take in. I'm looking forward to like listening to it like five times and going back and reading everything.
I had a tough time actually listening just because I was so like thinking about, okay, what am I going to ask after this and stuff like that. But it's pretty insane. And what's crazy is there's still like, there's not the, you know, if I were to like tell somebody, you know, the proverbial like elevator pitch, if I were to try that with this, I'd look like an idiot.
Oh, totally.
There's so much more to like talk about than that. Well, the kids and McQuarrie, you don't know what he's talking about. So.
Well, that's the thing, too. He's a really good storyteller, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So absolutely. It really links absolutely everything together. And oh, my God, there's just enough doubt. And like this just, and I wonder, okay, make a note. Ask this next week because I'm going to be too embarrassed to jump in, right? I wonder like if that story broke now. Like now that there's so much more distrust of the legal system and, you know, criminal justice and, you know, in a post making a murderer moment, you know, it's like everybody's really looking for those holes in things. And like this is kind of compelling from that point of view. And I don't know, maybe I'm just in a more.
We have our own show right there, Making a Molester.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? We have the one.
On I'm definitely a silent partner. But...
we have the guy here, too, the former headmaster of a school who was accused of it in Delaware. And he was found guilty, but then it was overturned on appeals because they said that it was like incorrectly. I don't know how it was, but they apparently found child pornography on his computer and it turned.
Like, so what's the name from the Who? I mean, come on.
Well, Pete Townsend, he was researching a book. Sure. So what happened to this guy, Sheldon?
I'll send you the link so we don't bore everyone with my pseudo pseudo explanation.
Yeah, I remember when Jay had him on, and I don't even listen to Jay Moore. It's really a random one. It just said something like in the description where it was like he's going to say something about the Sandusky case that you'd never in a million years think. And I didn't even like Google him or anything. I just started playing it, and I was like, oh my God, like we're going down this. I just assumed it was like Paterno was innocent or like, you know, whatever it might have been. And then I was like, it's captivating. Oh my God, like we're going like all the way down this trail. Huh?
It's totally captivating. Yeah. And it's like, I don't have any faith that he would have gotten a fair trial, you know?
Yeah.
Especially I'll question everything now. Really, I don't know what happened in society, but I just like question everything.
Well, I remember when it all happened, I remember thinking it happened really, like the trial was really quick. And I was like, that seems like, because there still was no perverted pun intended here, but there's like no smoking gun at all. And that's what was like, it was just like a whole bunch of people saying that this happened. And it turned around in like 48 hours, all of a sudden he was guilty and he's going to be in jail for the rest of his life. And it was kind of like, I just remember thinking like, that was quick.
Well, that's like, it. And that's why
way more obvious. And it took like, you know, forever.
Like he came up in conversation.
I don't trust the justice system. So.
Well, yeah, of course. You know, that's a story I tell all the time. That whole like consecutive versus concurrent, that's like the most awful thing.
It really is, dude.
You know,
it really is.
Nobody cares. You can't tell anybody about that. Yeah.
And the thing is, you're the bad guy for trying to make yourself, trying to make it legitimate because the only thing they say is, well, you shouldn't have done it. That's like the number one thing that people say.
It's like the dude who got his like spine broken and killed at the Baltimore police station, whatever his name was, and they're like, well, you know, he had a criminal past, and you're like,
he had a tail light out.
I know, exactly.
So all of a sudden one time you have a criminal past and all of a sudden you deserve to die at the hands of like police officers. What makes no sense to me is, like, we spend so much time vilifying the people who technically are victims just to try to find out, like, try to disprove their case. But we trust in a system that routinely has been broken, and we know it. But for some reason, we were like, oh, well, you know, he must have been doing something. It's like, no, chances are these people who are paid to really put people away in jail that make profits in the jail probably are doing something shady. But hey. Yeah.
Should we try to loop in Kurt Metzger into this?
Yeah, just kind of... how much bad publicity could we get?
If we're going with Kurt, let's just call Kurt Schilling too.
Isn't Michael Che always saying something stupid on Twitter?
So that was
crazy. So everybody at home, we've already said this a couple times, I'm sure, but the full interview, pretty much uncut, will be up on the website, just as like an MP3 form. I think, yeah, we'll probably even make it available to download if you want for all we care.
Oh, we could do an episode release on it. Yeah, we could do a little wrapper around. That'd be fun. Right,
exactly. And then we will, you know, this one obviously had about 20 minutes of the interview that we cut up a little bit. But the full 1 hour, give or take, interview is going to be up on the website, comedyfoodsports.com/ John Ziegler, probably. John-Ziegler.
You know what, too? Because I know you were talking about how he was, you know, really concerned about getting the whole thing up there. I don't know if I could cut it up to make him sound all that strange, you know?
No, you can't.
Like, I thought it was going to be more bizarre.
It wouldn't flow if you did. Yeah, if you cut it up, it wouldn't flow at all. So it wouldn't make sense, because everything he said was a timeline-based situation that makes sense.
Yeah, but no one part of it was, like, crazy, you know? Like, it was all, like, a little bit of doubt that was thrown in that was, like snowballing over the course of the story. I thought, because he came up, I don't even think it was after the show, right? We were talking, he just came up in conversation. You were talking about him being on the Jay Moore podcast. And I was so interested in getting him on because I didn't know a lot about the case when it happened. So I felt like I'm coming to this kind of, like, with a clean slate.
Yeah,
I just know that it was a thing, that it was like obvious that it was a horrible thing that happened all these years, and that, you know, they put him away really fast. Like you said, how long was the trial?
I don't remember the exact time, but it felt like it was a day or two.
Yeah, and then, like, reading about it before the interview, the grand jury deliberation went on for so long. That was years.
Yeah.
So when he started talking about that, too, I was like, well, yeah, all right, so that's a little suspect.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Sorry, I was just looking up the how long the trial was. I don't know. Yeah. 24, convicted minister, good times. by the way, somebody made a funny joke. I know the Kane Pence thing is not going on tonight, according to our release, but...
Sure.
But somebody had a picture of the two, and you got to kind of see the picture. But it's, he says, is anybody else saying, woodshop teacher versus the wrestling coach, huh? Exactly what they look like.
It does look like that, too.
All right. So we will wrap this episode up. We want to thank John Ziegler and Chip Chandry.
Sure.
Chip did not know what he was getting himself into. He's fully sponsoring this episode, by the way, so chipchandry.com. Make sure you check out Chip, though. He's at Good Good Comedy. It's a new theater here in Philly. It's on like 11th Street in Chinatown. October 27th, he's with the Found Footage Festival people. And the 29th, he's with the very funny Jeff Tate with a G. Super funny guy. And the Good Good Comedy Theater people are saying amazing things about that. So. And go check out framingpaterno.com. There are a million links. And I noticed he was actually on Reasonable Doubt, which is Mark Garagos and Adam Carolla, which is mostly Mark Garagos. But it's all legal cases that they just take on. Mark Garagos, I don't know if you guys know who he is, but he's probably one of the richest lawyers on earth. He's like heavily involved with very, very high profile cases. He's like, before Johnny Cochran, well, now that Johnny Cochran's gone, I would argue he's probably at that level that Johnny Cochran was. He just didn't have the O.J. Simpson case.
Now that he's gone. You said that so gently.
Yeah. You know, Kimmel had a great line at the Emmys, by the way, because the guy who played Cochran won for best, I think he was best lead actor or something like that. Oh. And he said, Jimmy said, I bet Johnny Cochran is just looking up at us really happy that he's like, he's in hell. he was actually, I rarely like watch any of those things, but Jimmy was actually great for that. Like that, he really, really nailed that. The Emmys there. The Emmys is normally a zilch. Armenian American criminal defense lawyer. I didn't know that about Garagos, but anyway.
Did you see the link I sent you?
I did. I'm scared to look, though.
Yeah, take a look.
This guy kind of looks like he is one anyway.
Yeah, that's what I said too. But,
sort of like Sandusky, I said, I guess, so, you know, what can you do? Right. I can't believe Sandusky's a big dude, by the way. That's like, I don't even rebuttal.
Yeah, I didn't think so either.
5'2 comment. I was like, I was looking for a laugh, but apparently he's a big dude. Makes sense. I mean, he's defensive coordinator for Division I football team. Anyway, we're wrapping things up. we should probably cut this up at some point. You can send it over to me, Jay, if you want. But thanks, everybody, for listening. It's our first episode on 1360 AM.
It is.
SB Nation Philly. We are very proud to be on the station, and we thank everybody for listening. Check us out at CFS Pod. That's what we are on Twitter. We're at Comedy Food Sports on Instagram. I got to post a picture for us to be official there, I guess. But just go to comedyfoodsports.com. Our Twitter feed is right on the left. Our most recent episodes are on the right. And any sort of content that we're creating, or Shane or any of our other guys are creating, we'll be right there. And we thank you guys for listening in, and make sure you go check out our fine sponsors, which will also be listed on the website. For Jay and Shelton and myself, Patrick, we thank you for listening to comedyfoodsports.com. We are listeners. Interstellar shortwave, pick it up all over the place. Interstellar shortwave, take you to another state. Excuse me.